After repeatedly misquoting the Declaration of Independence, President Obama has gotten it right during his past three political speeches, SRN's Greg Clugston reports.
On several occasions over the past few weeks, the president left out the part about people being endowed by their creator when quoting the Declaration. But that changed during the final three stops on the president's latest campaign trip, during speeches in Los Angeles and Las Vegas on Friday, and in Minneapolis on Saturday, Mr. Obama accurately referred to the creator.
It's not known if the president's omission was intentional or accidental. Pro-family advocates in Iowa want to recall three judges who voted to impose same-sex marriage on the state. To that end, several groups are banding together for a bus tour this week designed to rally support. The tour, headed by the National Organization for Marriage and Family Research Council Action, plans 20 stops across 1,300 miles in 45 counties. Begin on Monday, the goal is to recall the three judges on Election Day and replace them. This is SRN News. The United Nations Telecommunications Agency says the number of new mobile phone contracts is slowing as cell phone use reaches the saturation point.
A report from the International Telecommunications Union says developed countries already have 116 contracts for every 100 inhabitants. And the agency predicts that by year's end, there will be some 5.3 billion mobile subscriptions, including 940 million for high-speed connections.
That's SRN's Gordon Griffin reporting. Well, they're at it again. The German army says pirates have seized a German freight ship off the coast of Kenya. The attack comes less than 24 hours after a tanker from Singapore carrying 17 crewmen was captured by pirates off Kenya. Somali pirates have long been active in the region. They're currently holding 19 vessels and 428 hostages, according to the European Union's naval force. A spokesman for Germany says the freight ship was seized this morning with about 1,200 miles off of Kenya. This is SRN News.
The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is on, and we thank you for listening. Today we're tackling congestive heart failure with guest expert cardiologist Dr. Fadi Matar of the Florida Cardiovascular Institute in Tampa, Florida. But first, this radio show and the free annual Focus on Females Healthcare Symposium, now the largest in the country with over 1,000 women during each of our last two events, with a combined 7,500 hours of education during these 2 days, is supported by the not-for-profit Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based healthcare safety net, making you an expert on your personal medical needs. The result? Better partnering with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families through the immediate impact of direct with the expert health education. And if you want to read about Focus on Females or some of the columns that are written, I write a column every edition of the Tampa Bay Women's Newspaper. That Tampa Bay Women's Newspaper is free and can be found at over 3,000 Tampa Bay area locations, such as medical offices, health clubs, organic grocery stores, and hair and beauty salons. And the articles I write are educational, informational, and resourceful, and also includes a list of upcoming radio shows. And today, as mentioned, we are tackling congestive heart failure, and with me as guest expert, Dr. Fadi Mattar. And Fadi, it's nice to see you again. And Dr. Mattar has been in general and interventional cardiology practice for 16 years in Tampa, Florida. He graduated from Washington Hospital Center, George Washington University, in 1994. Fadi is the clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of South Florida and the director of the cardiac care unit at Tampa General Hospital. He's also the director of the Cardiovascular Simulation Center at the University of South Florida. Dr. Mattar has authored multiple peer-reviewed articles in the subject of cardiology and interventional cardiology. He's actively involved in clinical trials relating to coronary artery disease, new stent designs, and baroreflex modulation for the treatment of systemic hypertension and diastolic congestive heart failure. And if any of this stuff pertains to you, or if you're interested in knowing what this is, or how it could possibly pertain to you or your loved ones or family or friends, call us. And the number to reach us is, of course, we are live. The number to reach us is 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. That's 289-1860. And everywhere else, for those that may be streaming this online, it's toll-free, 877-969-8600, 877-969-8600. And so, Fadi, congestive heart failure, boy, I remember this back from medical school. It just seemed that this is such a common problem where the heart does not pump adequately for the needs of the body. What is congestive heart failure for our listeners?
Congestive heart failure is, by definition, the inability of the heart to deliver the required amount of blood to the body. And that would result in a syndrome that we call it, which is multiple symptoms that are occur together. Those symptoms are shortness of breath, fatigue, inability to do the regular daily activities in a normal fashion, as well as lightheadedness and failure to thrive.
So is the degree of congestive heart failure or the requirements different for different people? In other words, different people, do different people have a different level of heart, cardiac performance such that before they enter a congestive heart failure?
Well, I mean, it's I wouldn't word it this way. Mm-hmm. The heart will be able to deliver enough blood based on the body habitus of the patient and their need. Once that balance is no longer normal, this is when we can call it heart failure.
So, for example, someone who leads a more sedentary life, say, compared to a younger athlete, is there, you know, different requirement? I imagine there must be different requirements. And therefore, the patient would get short of breath and fatigued, lightheaded at different times of cardiac weakness?
Well, that's called conditioning.
Okay.
So a sedentary patient, as opposed to an athlete, would have still a normal heart function without congestive heart failure, yet they will feel breathless and unable to do their daily activities, but that's not congestive heart failure. That's called deconditioning. Their muscles are not able to do things the way they should, and their perception of shortness of breath would come earlier. It is not congestive heart failure.
Okay. Let's go over and track blood flow to the heart and lungs and how that works, the four chambers, and so we can talk about how the fluid can get backed in the lungs.
Okay. The heart, as everybody knows, is made of four chambers. The two secondary chambers called the atria, and the two primary chambers are called the ventricles. The ventricles are the pumping chambers that send the blood outside the heart. So those four chambers work in series. The blood coming from the body enters the right atrium, which in return sends it to the right ventricle. This is the low pressure chamber. That right ventricle sends the blood through the pulmonary artery into the lungs, where it will get oxygenated. So the oxygen level will replenish this blood, which comes back to the left atrium, which in return sends it into the left ventricle, which is the chamber that pumps the blood to the body. And that occurs in a cycle.
Okay. And so with congestive heart failure, with the manifestations you already listed, shortness of breath, fatigue, lightheadedness, does that imply a backup of fluid from the heart then into the lungs?
Okay. It will be useful to step backward a little and discuss the types of congestive heart failure, because there are several. There are the main congestive heart failure entity that most people use or think of is when that pumping chamber, the left ventricle, becomes weak. This is called systolic congestive heart failure, where that ventricle fails to send enough blood to the body as it receives it from the left atrium. And that results into a backing of the blood, the pressures into the left atrium backs up into the left into the lungs, and the lungs fill up with fluids, and that results in heart failure symptoms, which is shortness of breath. People cannot walk with some distances without getting short of breath. They cannot lay flat. They have to sleep with their heads propped up. They may wake up in the middle of the night multiple times or several times a week, unable to catch their breaths. So this is mainly systolic heart failure. At the same time, because that left ventricle is unable to send enough blood to the body, people feel weak unable to do their daily activities, and that results in fatigue.
Is there a risk for stroke or cerebrovascular disease with systolic
heart
failure?
Yes. Because the left ventricle is weak, it's dilated, blood within it does not circulate briskly as it normally should, which results in stagnation of the blood in that ventricle. And whenever we have stagnation of blood in its chamber, of the vascular chamber, clots can form. And those clots can break off and go to the brain or elsewhere in the body, causing strokes and other problems.
Okay. And the other types of congestive heart failure?
The other types of congestive heart failure, the second one, is called the diastolic congestive heart failure. Now, in this instance, the pumping force of the left ventricle is not the problem. The ventricle is able to pump blood to the body, but it does not relax well. So think of the left ventricle as a ball that has a certain thickness, wall thickness. The ventricle, for it to send blood, it has to receive it adequately. And the way it receives the blood, let's concentrate on the left ventricle right now. So the left ventricle has to actively dilate to create a gradient between the left atrium and the left ventricle so that the blood will more easily flow into that chamber. Once you have enough blood filling that chamber, then the squeeze occurs, and that blood gets sent to the body. Some patients, and there are various entities or diseases that can lead to this, some patients, their ventricles can squeeze well, but they don't relax as well. If they don't relax well, they don't get enough blood And they, if they don't get enough blood, they cannot send enough blood away.
What is, if you would, give us a couple of names of types of diseases that would fall in that category, perhaps people have heard
the
of.
The most important one, the most common one, is hypertension, high blood pressure, chronic high blood pressure, which leads to stiffening of the heart muscle and impairs its ability to relax.
Okay.
The second one is coronary disease. Any reduction of blood flow to that ventricle can lead to impairment of relaxation. So these are the two big ones. There are other ones, valvular disease. If you have obstruction to the blood flow leaving the ventricle such a, and one of the valves such as the aortic valve, that ventricle has to strain every heartbeat to pump blood away, you know, against it, mm-hmm. and that makes it stiff and less, and actually the less
able to dilate and relax.
Right, and the other one is as we grow older, we develop these kind of inabilities to relax the ventricles.
How about the systolic type of congestive heart failure? Are there syndromes or disease states that are commonly thought of seen with a left ventricular weakness?
Yes. The most common one is coronary disease also in heart attacks. When the patient develops a heart attack, a part of the heart muscle dies or becomes weak. And people who have large heart attacks develop this kind of heart failure or systolic heart failure, or people who develop small but multiple heart attacks, meaning damage to the heart muscles, that can result in weakening of the systolic heart failure. But there are many others. Valves, if you have leaky valves for a long period of time, that can strain that heart muscle and dilate it. Or people develop, for some reason, disease in the muscle itself. This is myocardial diseases. And the most common is a virus infecting the heart muscle itself, weakening it.
All right, so in both cases, the symptoms are the same, is that correct, with the shortness of breath and fatigue and lightheadedness?
Correct. Shortness of breath, fatigue, and lightheadedness, as well as swelling, body swelling and leg swelling. It's common for both of them.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Call now with your questions at 289-1860. That's 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Elsewhere, toll-free 877-969-8600. When we come back, we'll talk about the reversibility of of congestive heart failure, as well as prognosis, diagnosis, and treatment. Be right back with more.
The Pelosi Democrats are going, gone. Hi, it's Mike Gallagher. Midterm voters are preparing to send the Democrats packing in November, and Town Hall Magazine has a scathing examination of the reasons why. District by district and state by state, Town Hall Magazine handicaps the races for you to watch on election night, plus words of wisdom from Michael Barone, Thomas Sowell, and much more. Log on to townhallmagazine.com and subscribe to get the fresh, conservative, intelligent reporting you need now more than ever. townhallmagazine.com.
I'm John Michael Chambers. Join me Saturdays on WGUL. I'll address the challenges facing Americans today, the transformation of our currency, financial system, and freedoms. I'll be joined by experts from economists to trends forecasters, precious metals experts, politicians, constitutionalists, and you, the American citizens. This is a wake-up call for action. Our freedom is at stake.
Listen to John Michael Chambers at his new time, Saturdays at 2, on Talk Radio 860, WGUL.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health literacy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon, Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010. And as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America, we hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Focus. Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860. And everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, hi. Well, welcome back on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm with Dr. Fadi Matar of the Florida Cardiovascular Institute. We're discussing congestive heart failure. And we began talking about left-sided congestive heart failure. Let's talk about right-sided congestive heart failure. Fadi, can you explain what that is?
The second ventricle that we talked about earlier is the right ventricle, which sends the blood to the lungs. So any problems that affect the lungs can translate into difficulty on that ventricle. For example, patients with emphysema, their lungs are diseased and blood doesn't circulate well. The high resistance in the lungs can affect that right ventricle. The right ventricle is used to low pressures. And if their pressures in the vasculatures of the lungs are increased due to any disease, then it can easily affect that right ventricle, and it takes several years for that to happen. As examples of what diseases can affect the lungs are emphysema, blood clots to the lungs, pulmonary embolus, or patients who do not ventilate well at night, these patients with obstructive sleep apnea. If they don't breathe well when they are asleep, the low oxygen level can create vasoconstriction or tightening of their vascular beds. All of those can affect the function of the right ventricle, and that is very prone to failing because it's not used to high pressures like the left ventricle is, and therefore over time it becomes incompetent and unable to pump enough. When the right ventricle does not pump enough, the left ventricle does not receive enough, and therefore the left ventricle cannot pump enough to the body.
Okay. So tell us about how you diagnose this condition. What's the workup, what's involved beyond the history, and obviously you listen to the heart, but let's go beyond that. How do you work up these patients?
So when patients present with any of those symptoms that can imply left or right ventricular failure, the next easy step is to do a 12-lead EKG, electrocardiogram tells us whether the heart muscle, there are any suggestion of a previous heart attack. It tells us whether or not there's a possibility for dilatation of the left or right ventricle. And it tells us how the electricity is conducting every heartbeat, if it's taking too long for the electrical impulse to go through the heart muscle per heartbeat. That's a quick and easy way to give us an idea of what the heart might look like. The next easy way of checking it out is to do a simple echocardiogram and ultrasound. Using ultrasound waves, this is an office procedure, we can actually see the heart muscle itself. We can measure its thickness. We can assess the heart valve. Heart valves, we can look at the left and the right ventricles, and that can give us a very good idea of what we're dealing with.
So by the time you finish examination in the office, you have a pretty good idea what's going on.
Pretty good idea of what type of heart failure the patient has, if any.
Okay. And then from there, how do you go beyond this? What's the next level of evaluation?
Once we diagnose a patient to have either left or right ventricular failure, the next step is to find out why that is the case. As I mentioned earlier, there are multiple reasons for those kind of failures. One of them, for example, is coronary disease. The other one is hypertension. The third one is valves. So if we want to rule out coronary disease, underlying coronary disease, then we will typically do a stress test with imaging, like a nuclear stress test. And if that is abnormal, meaning potentially blockages of the arteries are the culprit or the reason for this, then a heart catheterization might be required.
Okay, and I think we're going to take a hard break here now. We'll be back with more on evaluation of congestive heart failure and then treatment. We'll be right back with more.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. The Republican and Democratic parties are both predicting they will win control of the House on Election Day. Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Steele tells NBC an unprecedented wave of voter discontent will produce a big GOP win. President Obama is taking a break from campaigning today. He is scheduled to get back out tomorrow, traveling in Rhode Island. Former President Bill Clinton will be stumping as well. Pakistan's foreign minister says his country's military will deal with a key Taliban sanctuary along the Afghan border on its own timeline, made the comments after returning from talks in Washington. And Hurricane Richard is making its way toward Belize and southeastern Mexico. The U.S. Hurricane Center says Richard has top winds of 85 miles per hour now. The storm is hitting Honduras' Caribbean coast with heavy rain and wind, warnings of mudslides and floods. This is SRN News.
Election 2010.
The 2010 midterm election is underway. The votes are being counted. The absentees cast, and the stakes can be higher. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. Voters are about to render their verdict on the first 2 years of the Obama administration. America is moving in a new direction. We're about to make history. Make sure you vote. And then join me right here on Election Day and Night for comprehensive national results and analysis you cannot get anywhere else.
Complete coverage begins at 6 with the Hugh Hewitt Show on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Hey, this is Bill Bennett. Voting often seems like a hassle. It's difficult to work into a busy schedule, but remember the immense joy on the faces of those in countries like Iraq and Afghanistan who are just now experiencing the freedom to cast a vote? They finally have a say in the direction of their country. In our great country, you have a say on the first Tuesday of November. Be there. Exercise your freedom. Make sure you vote.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome. Welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling congestive heart failure today with Dr. Fadi Matar, cardiologist, from the Florida Cardiovascular Institute here in Tampa, Florida. And Fadi, in fact, on break, you had mentioned, actually before the show, some of the exciting work you're doing to kind of link cardiologists throughout the country on the web. Would you like to share that with our listeners?
Yeah, we are trying to take advantage of the information superhighway, the internet these days. We can link people together in different continents and different parts of the world. And we felt that there is a need for this kind of forum, especially for cardiovascular specialists, which includes the cardiologist, the interventional radiologist, cardiac surgeons, and vascular surgeons, to meet on a regular basis without having to leave their towns and offices. And we created a web medium that uses currently available communication webinars to share cases, discuss cases, to help each physician in their practices. And that's called cathquest.com. Great.
In the quest for optimal therapies.
Yes, and that's the ultimate goal, taking the best care of our patients.
And I imagine it's the case, too, in cardiology that really, although there are similarity between cases, there is really no identical cases.
Right? Absolutely. Humans are different. There's no, you cannot find anybody who's this exact replica. So you're going to have always variabilities, and it's going to present challenges to the way that we take care of patients.
Okay, let's go back to congestive heart failure. And by the way, I think that's a great and laudatory thing you're doing. On behalf of other doctors, thank you so much. Tell us about, going back to congestive heart failure, we talked about different types of congestive heart failure diagnosis. Now, you mentioned about using the EKG, the echocardiogram, the stress test to sort out the type of congestive heart failure. From the stress test, when do you go to the catheterization? If there's a clear indication, I imagine, of coronary artery disease?
Yes, correct. Again, we want to make sure that enough blood is reaching the territories of the heart muscle. And before doing heart catheterization, we want to get a lead whether or not there's an indication for it. And if there is such a thing, such as when we do a nuclear stress test, we see part of the heart muscle not getting enough blood supply, then this is when we will go for a heart catheterization. Heart catheterization is an outpatient procedure. People can go to the hospital, get it done, and then potentially go home within 2 hours. So it's not as it used to be, but it gives us a lot of information about the coronary status patency. And if there is or there are blockages in the coronary arteries, and if we think that they indeed are the cause of the heart failure, this is when we potentially can revascularize the patient's arteries. And you can do that percutaneously with stents or with open heart surgery to allow those arteries to deliver enough blood to the heart muscle, hopefully to reverse or improve the symptoms of heart failure.
When you say percutaneously open up the blood vessel with stents, that's the same access as a catheterization, correct?
Yes, that gets done through the same route, going either from the femoral artery, the groin artery, or from the arm, the radial, or the brachial. And then all of them all those approaches can allow us to put stents. But I like to stress the importance of putting stents when they are needed, because a lot of times you see blockages in the arteries but are not necessarily the cause of the heart failure. So those blockages, when you look at them visually, you need to have enough information to make you make the right decision whether or not to put stents, because sometimes you don't need to put stents even if there are some blockages.
So, for example, if a blockage may be 50% and it's felt not to be clinically important, then it's wiser to leave that one alone?
It's much wiser not to touch it. And there are tools right now we have at our disposition in the cath lab that if we find blockages that are borderline, we're not sure, they don't correlate with the nuclear images, that we can put a small wires, very thin wires, as thin as a hair. It has a pressure transducer beyond it, and then we can induce with some medication, intravenous medications, what we call hyperemia. And then we, in a sense, quote-unquote, we can stress that area and see if there's a pressure drop across it. And if there is, then there will be a need for a stent. But if there isn't, then we don't have to. And so we use those techniques to assess not only the visual appearance of a blockage, which can be misleading, but we use physiologic indicators, whether then we really can help the patient.
And when you say a stent, people have read about using balloons to open up blocked areas. Would you go a little bit into, when you say a stent, does that include the use of a balloon to open it up, or is it just a stent to keep it open, or does one use both?
Yes. We use, in general, use both. First, if the blockage is quite severe, and to advance a stent, which is basically a metal mesh that's crimped over another balloon. So in order to advance this bulkier apparatus, you have to dilate that area. So you first do it with a balloon. Rarely we have to use a roto-rooter if the blockage is calcified to create a path to allow for allow the balloon stent assembly to go through. So once that's done, then the stent gets placed and the balloon inflated, then deflated, the stent gets propped up, pushing the blockage away, and the stent stays in place, forever. And then the balloon gets removed. And there are two kinds of stents. The stent that was originally, placed in humans in the early 90s, these are bare metal stent. We later learned that those bare metal stents create a scar and proliferation of new scars that become blocked in about 30% of the patients. So therefore, the newer stents that we are currently using for in about 80% of the times have a medication covering them. Those medications can elute through the vessel wall and inhibit scar formation, and that reduced the recurrence rate of the blockages due to scarring from about 30% down to about 10% or less.
And is this medication, is it a steroid medication? Is it some like a VGF inhibitor, a growth factor inhibitor?
Those medications are, there are different kinds. These are the medications that we normally use, like, for example, in transplants. We don't want the proliferation of the vascular problems or inflammation. So they inhibit the mitosis or reduce the replications of the cells locally, so that when the scar, they prevent the scar from becoming voluminous, and by inhibiting the cell cycle replication.
Do you have a couple of names that you can share with us?
Well, there are a few approved in the U.S. One of them is the Cypher. That's the first generation stent. The other one is the Taxus stent. This is these were the first two approved. And then the second generation stents, one of them is called the Xience, Promus, and the Endeavor. These are the three second generation stents that are being used in this country.
Okay. And again, calling now with questions. This is a great opportunity to ask your questions about congestive heart failure, for that matter, coronary artery disease or other causes of congestive heart failure. 289-1860 is 289-1860. Outside of Hillsborough County, it's 877-969-8600. So we talked a little bit about some of the treatment for, say, coronary artery disease in the setting of congestive heart failure. What are some of the other therapies that, or actually we should go back to the beginning. Let's say you have a left-sided, a systolic or diastolic patient with diastolic or systolic congestive heart failure. How will you advise them as far as how to get their disease under control?
Okay, let's start with the systolic heart failure. So let's say somebody has weak heart muscle, the left ventricle does not pump enough, and we decided to do a heart cath, and the heart cath shows no blockages, and we do not see any valvular problems, yet the heart muscle is weak. And therefore, the diagnosis here is we call it idiopathic, meaning we don't know what it is, and most likely a virus affected the heart muscle at some point prior to this led to its weakness. So patients with no identifiable causes for systolic heart failure.
And we should say that normal blood pressure, right?
Yeah, with normal or abnormal doesn't matter here. But I mean, let's say you're right. A patient with normal blood pressure, no coronary disease, no valvular disease. These are called idiopathic, or we don't know what they're coming from. We think it could have been a virus. Here, the treatment will be medical. We cannot operate. We shouldn't operate. There's nothing to operate on. We cannot put stents. So we're going to have to unload the heart. And there are several medications that we use. Some of the medications are geared towards symptom improvement, meaning getting rid of excess fluids so that the patients will be less short of breath. So these are the diuretics, and we have to supplement potassium with them because diuretics get rid of potassium. So symptomatic treatment will be with diuretics. The other symptomatic treatment will be addition of digoxin. Digitalis is a plant that gives us this medication called digoxin. It's a very old agent that helps improve the heart muscle, but it's a very minor improvement. It also can help in improving the patient's symptoms. It does not affect the mortality. The other agents that we use that might positively affect mortality as well as symptoms are the beta blockers and the ACE inhibitors. The beta blockers, such as atenolol, metoprolol, or Coreg, carvedilol, these are agents that block the adrenal receptors on the heart muscle. And the reason why they help improve the patient's survival is because when the patient has systolic heart failure, there's a higher adrenaline tone in the body. And high adrenaline tone in the body for years can, initially, it can improve the heart muscle, but on the long run, it can negatively impact the heart muscle and make the heart muscle weaken even quicker. Mm-hmm. So you don't want that chronic adrenaline stimulation of the heart muscle, so you have to give them beta blockers.
And the beta blockers offset that elevated tone.
Yes, the beta blockers block those receptors so the high adrenaline tone does not beat on that mm-hmm. dying heart muscle continuously day and night. Mm-hmm. So the other set of agents are the angiotensin-converting enzyme inhibitors or ACE inhibitors. And the other types of similar agents are ARBs, angiotensin receptor blockers. Those two agents break the cycle of the high hormonal activation of the aldosterone system, which also, like the beta, like the adrenaline, on the long run can affect the heart muscle negatively.
Okay.
And the third agent, which will be aldactone, is also similar to the ACE inhibitors and ARB, but it's a weak diuretic that also works on that cascade to prevent the continuous hormonal overstimulation of the heart.
When I think back into my experience 20 years ago in medical school about these patients, I was so impressed about how some of these patients would bounce back after being discharged because they had poor control of their diet. Would you make a comment about the effect of diet on congestive heart failure, this type of congestive heart failure?
Well, here is, again, the importance of the patient's participation in their own health. And they have to be first well-educated about what it is they have and what can they do to improve their lifestyle, their survival, and prevent frequent hospitalization. If the patient does not pay attention to their diet, fluid intake, salt intake, or taking their medications, there will be frequent flyers to the hospitals. And that's why education is very important. Patients need to understand that they cannot eat freely all the things that they shouldn't, and they should weigh themselves every day. They should, for example, take their extra Lasix if their weight increases, let's say, 2 pounds or more in one day. And promptly call their doctors for help, so that we want to avoid frequent hospitalizations. And being in a hospital is not fun.
No, absolutely not. Could, of course, lead to other problems too. All right, so that's a nice overview of the management of systolic hypertension.
Systolic heart failure.
Heart failure.
There's one
me.
More in people with. with severely reduced heart function, these people are at risk for sudden cardiac death, and they will require a defibrillator placed because, again, our goal is to make patients live happier and live longer. And this therapy prolongs life because these are pacemaker-like devices that are implanted percutaneous, you know, with a local anesthesia, and then they will shock the heart should the ventricle fibrillate. Fibrillates mean death, and that brings the patient's heart back to life. And there are also now biventricular pacemakers in certain patients, not all of them. Those defibrillators can have a pacemaker that stimulates the right ventricle and the left ventricle in synchrony, which is felt to improve the effectiveness of the two chambers pumping. A lot of those patients, the right and left ventricles beat an offbeat and not close enough, and that makes them even worse. So by resynchronizing the two chambers beating at the same time with biventricular pacemakers, we have seen significant improvement of heart function with those patients.
And you also mentioned in the diastolic congestive heart failure scenario, sometimes there's stagnation of blood and risk for blood clots.
That's mainly systolic.
Systolic side.
Systolic, okay. Because the heart is baggy, large. The blood is not circulating fast enough, and stagnation occurs. In the diastolic, that's not the issue there.
So in the case of systolic, would patients then be candidates for blood clot therapy or to
blood
thin the blood? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Coumadin is what we currently have to reduce the incidence of strokes, embolic strokes.
I think I read somewhere recently a new blood thinner available or coming on the market.
There are several new ones that we are not approved yet as far as the thrombin. As everybody knows, Coumadin is very hard to manage, and hopefully with those new agents, we won't have to we'll
monitor
manage
the
either.
Levels, right?
Yeah.
Supposedly you get away from having to constantly
exactly.
monitor their blood levels and their
yeah.
PT. We're going to take one last break. We'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now with your questions. We still have a few minutes left. 289-1860 in Hillsborough County. Elsewhere, it's 877-969-8600. Be right back with more on Congestive Heart Failure.
Are the Pelosi Democrats going, gone in November? Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. Midterm voters are preparing to send the Democrats packing. And Town Hall Magazine is a scathing examination of the reasons why, district by district and state by state. Town Hall Magazine handicaps the contest for you to watch on election night. Plus, words of wisdom from Michael Barone, Thomas Sowell, and much more. Log on to townhallmagazine.com and subscribe to get the fresh, conservative, intelligent reporting you need now more than ever. Townhallmagazine.com.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Their mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit FocusOnFemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702. Thank you.
Host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. He has written a best-selling, award-winning book, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome, published by Yale University Press. Dr. Maskin manages dry eye disorders using, when needed, innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has successfully managed difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He has been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2010. And as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America, we hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please visit drmaskin.com. And if you have not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Hi, this is Chuck Colson. We've all heard the saying that every vote counts. Well, that's particularly true this election cycle. America is at a crossroads. And at such a critical juncture, every single vote will make a difference for the future of our great nation. In trying times like these, it's more important than ever to make your voice heard. Be sure to cast your vote for the future direction of our nation on November the 2nd. Thank you and God bless you.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, welcome back. We are tackling congestive heart failure today with the Florida Cardiovascular Institute's Dr. Fadi Mattar, and we've covered a lot of material on congestive heart failure. We talked about, well, definitions, diagnosis, some of the treatments. Is there any treatments we haven't covered that we ought to go into, Fadi?
Yeah, in hypertension, diastolic, let's talk about left ventricular diastolic heart failure. And this is mainly due to high blood pressure and potentially valvular disease. Let's say the patient has severe blockage of the aortic valve. Treatment there is fix the valve, replace it, or surgically, or in the future we'll be able to replace it by going through the groin and deploying it, the new valve through the groin. If it's not valvular in origin, it's just pure high pressure. High blood pressure for years can result in a stiffening of the heart muscle. So these patients have stiff heart muscles, yet their pumping of action is fine. The treatment here is blood pressure control. That's number one. Diuretics for symptom relief. Potassium supplements, because you have to do this when you give diuretics. Now, there are some medications that have shown some variable degrees of effectiveness. These are calcium channel blockers like diltiazem, cardizem, amlodipine, or VASC. These agents, as well as beta blockers, adrenaline receptor, they block the adrenaline's receptors. These can reduce or improve the stiffening of the heart muscle, make them relax better. But the results are variable. They're not necessarily good in all patients, and we're not sure which patients are going to respond from those. So for those patients who don't respond from those agents, now there are experimental techniques that we're not sure if they're going to work. They might. Currently, they are being tested. One of them is the baroreflex stimulation. This is where we can take advantage of the baroreflexes, meaning these are little nerves and receptors that are situated in the neck artery, the carotid, at the junction between the external and internal carotid artery. These receptors are meant or created by God to adjust the blood pressure, so that if the pressure is too high, the pressure exerts tension on those receptors that send a negative signal to the brainstem and the medulla, which is the center of controlling the blood pressure and heart muscle function, including the relaxation of the heart muscle, backwards to reverse the effects of high blood pressure.
So how do you see using that baroreflex to benefit?
Yeah. Right now, the clinical trial was finished in patients with high blood pressure, trying to control high pressure by creating surgically, minimal surgery, by wrapping the outside of those baroreceptors with electrodes and linking those electrodes under the skin with a tunnel and with a pocket placed like a pacemaker pocket, like a pacemaker-like device mm-hmm. under the skin. This device stimulates those receptors electrically to fool the body, fool the brain, tell the brain, okay, the pressure's too high, you need to relax everything, including the heart muscle.
This is a real-time therapy.
Yes, it's ongoing. It continues all the time. Right. It stimulates, and you can adjust the amplitude of the stimulators.
Okay, let me just say, we're at the end of our hour, and 30 seconds to give a take-home message, if you would, Dr. Mattar.
Take-home message, the heart failure can be either left ventricular, right ventricular. The left ventricular heart failure can be systolic or diastolic. Left ventricular systolic heart failure it has the worst prognosis. There are lots of medical treatments. We have a lot of things to offer in the future. Hopefully, we can that can lead to improved survival and improved quality of care.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic, we're covering scleroderma. Scleroderma with guest expert Dr. Joel Silverfield. That's next Sunday, October 31st. In the meantime, this is Dr. Maskin wishing each and every one of you a happy and healthy week. See you next week. Check out the detail, the focus, focus, yeah, the focus, focus, oh yeah, the focus, focus, yeah, the focus, focus, focus on females. Your choice for intelligent talk. Talk Radio 860 WGUL, Dunedin, Tampa Bay, a service of Salem.